Final hour of our discussion with Judge Jim Gray about the war on drugs, the failed war on drugs, and what other alternatives might be more workable. You know, from a practical political standpoint, you have to wonder if widespread change would even be possible. As the judge just mentioned, it would be pretty darn easy for a political opponent to crank out a 30-second TV spot and say, my opponent is soft on drugs, and you got to vote against him, and it would work. So how do you elect people who have a different view? How do you get people to pass these kinds of laws and not have political repercussions or getting kicked out of office? We'll get into that question and then go right to the phones. I know from all the emails and fast blasts that a heck of a lot of you have questions and comments for the judge. We'll get to as many as we can right after this on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be going to the phone lines in just a moment. Right now, though, this question, the practical political considerations, Your Honor. Could you run on this platform and win an election for judge or for state assemblyman or Congress?
Actually, I think, George, that now I could. I can run on this initiative in California to treat marijuana like alcohol. I think it's going to pass, and I think that this could get someone elected where they couldn't otherwise. You know, we passed Prop 215 in California, the medical marijuana involvement, where the government was against it, all the politicians, the chiefs of police, as you said earlier, you know, the drug czar, it still passed by 56% of the vote. So in this regards, I think that the voters, the people, are ahead of the politicians. And like we said earlier with regard to the chiefs of police, the politicians need political cover, but politicians are really good at one thing. They're good at followership. They'll follow where the votes are, and when they see that the votes are in favor of change, then they will get out front and lead the charge. I think that shift is occurring, where I've been talking about this for now 18 years. About the last 6 months, the wind's at our backs. People are getting it. I've been on lots of radio talk show hosts. They're all pretty much in a favor of it. And I'm looking forward to talking to your listeners here, but I expect that most of them will be as well. And they have clarifying questions and what ifs and the rest. And, you know, we'll explore them together. But people are beginning to get it, and now I think the politicians are going to get in line.
But that 30-second spot to run against you, that your opponent would come up with, is so easy to do.
True.
And so powerful.
You know, but I guarantee it, George, I don't know how old you are. I'm 65, but I'm going to see this in my lifetime, and so are you. It's going to happen, I think, fairly soon. And once again, people will look back and be aghast that we could have perpetuated this failed system of drug prohibition for so long. That'll be really apparent. We'll be astonished that we could have perpetuated this for so long.
And like so much else, it starts in California and it spreads elsewhere?
Yeah, some of the things we do in California are good. And I think that it will start again in California. It will spread the country. The Obama administration, just like with medical marijuana, where Attorney General Holder said, you know, as long as people in medical marijuana dispensaries and people with cards are acting in accordance with state and local law, the federal government will not interfere. They'll do the same thing when we pass this initiative to treat marijuana like alcohol. I cannot conceive the Obama administration's going to thumb its noses at the voters of California with an election coming up. So they'll probably make noises like, oh, silly, oh, you'll never work, oh, you were duped, but we're going to let you do it. And then the people around the country are going to see, hey, this works, and other states will follow along, and we will at least do away with prohibition of marijuana. And then we'll all look together and see what we should do next, if anything.
You know, we've seen a heck of a lot of negative attitude from the federal government regarding state drug laws, decriminalization of marijuana, allowing people to grow their own, and the federal agencies go right after them and bust them anyway.
Well, George, I think everybody will agree that the federal government does not have all the answers. And here it's just that arrogance that needs to come to an end. California is perfectly able to decide what's best for the people of California. So is Missouri. So is Vermont. Let's let them do that and get the federal government out of this, just like we did when we repealed alcohol prohibition. We did not say that now, okay, Illinois will make alcohol illegal for adults. We just said, let Illinois decide how best to serve its people, and they can continue from there. That's what we'll do when we finally come to our senses in this area, too.
Let's go to the phone, see what's on the minds of our listeners. East of the Rockies, Keith in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Yes. I can't help but think, if memory serves me right in history, China had a bad opium problem. And in fact, if I remember, that so many of them were so doped up on free use of opium, that's one reason the Mongols conquered them like they did. And once they regained their nation, they did make possession of opium a capital offense. And Saudi Arabia also, possession of alcohol or any other sort of narcotic, is also a capital offense. I don't think they have quite the problem we have here. I know it's a hard line to take.
Yeah.
And I'm about as old as y'all. I'm 62. I'm a combat veteran from Vietnam, and I know they busted people for stuffing bodies coming back from over there with heroin, which was sickening to me. I don't take, you know, capital punishment lightly. I, you know, get over there in Vietnam, you have to do a lot of, you know, things like that. You know, well, that's warfare. But I do know that you cannot let up. If you do, if we let up on them over there, we would have been the ones. We'd still be laying in the jungle over there somewhere.
But, well, I'll tell you, Keith, it's like, would you want to live in Saudi Arabia where they can kill you for smoking weed or using some other kind of drug? Because I sure as heck wouldn't.
There again, they don't have the problems we have either, do they? And if you'd hammered some of those drug cartels, they dropped napalm on them like they did over there in Vietnam. It's a hard line. It's either going to be one or the other. You can't have a gray area there. If you want to maintain your nation, you got to have discipline. That's one thing we learned in the Marines and Blue. Back in those days, I mean, it was strict, you know, it was discipline, but that's what helped us survive in combat.
Well, we're not in combat on the streets of America. At least we shouldn't be. I guess some are combat zones. Your Honor, you want to tackle what Keith had to say?
Well, yes, indeed. And I think Keith is right in a lot of ways. China did become problematic with regard to the opium wars, and they were basically inflicted on them by England, who pushed it. It continued for a long time. When Mao took over the country, you know, he pretty much did away with the addicted problem. He just killed those people. That's not something that we will ever do, nor should we. Saudi Arabia does have drug problems. Singapore does have drug problems. I acknowledge that they have fewer, but, you know, like you're saying, you can either have a free society or a drug-free society, but you certainly cannot have both. I do not want to give up my civil liberties. The civil liberties make the United States of America, the soul of our country, make it the beacon of the world. So, you know, if you want to give up your Fourth Amendment rights to Singapore government or Saudi Arabia or China, Keith, you know, go ahead. But by the way, I quickly say, when you say you're from Shreveport, prior to the passage of the Harrison Narcotics Act and a case called United States versus Webb, Shreveport led our country with regard to investigating and working with drug-addicted people. They had a really fine medical team there that was doing research, and we're working really well with them. But when we passed the U.S. versus Webb case and also the Harrison Act, they could no longer prescribe heroin for drug-addicted people, and pretty much all research in our country stopped until maybe around the 1990s when it resumed again. So, Keith, you can hold your head up high as to being from Shreveport. They were doing some good work until the federal government made them stop.
Keith, thanks for the call. That was a pretty legitimate point there. West of the Rockies, Davida in Long Beach, California.
Thank you for taking my call. Before I hang up after I give what I was going to say, I'm wondering if you could tell me what happened to Sean David Morton. I certainly would like to hear him again. We haven't heard him for a long time. But
Well, he was indicted.
For what?
Securities fraud. The SEC indicted him on several counts of securities fraud. Innocent till proven guilty, we should say.
Oh, I see. Well, he is a good prophet. But anyway, I'm calling about annihilating all drugs, not just marijuana. And I think the only way to do it is to, when somebody's caught with the possession of marijuana, taking it, selling it, or buying it. They should be given an, what do they call it, something to counteract the drug, put it in their body, and it makes them desperately sick. It might even kill them. But after all, they're selling the drugs, kills people's children. So, I mean, we're just not picking people out involuntarily and killing them. The people involved in drugs. And some of them would die and some wouldn't. But I think eventually the drug dealers would give up what they're doing, not overnight, though. I'm thinking if it happened overnight, if overnight all drugs were made legal, then now we have so much unemployment in the country now. If all the drug dealers overnight didn't have a job, they couldn't find a legitimate job, because even the people now, so many are out of work.
Hey, DeVita, I'm having a hard time following you here. I'm having a hard time following that.
Well,
now,
sorry.
You're in favor of, for example, somebody smokes marijuana, you inject them with chemicals that might kill them, so that they don't smoke it again?
I mean, we're either going to get rid of it or not. And I don't believe in putting it around. I know one good thing would come with your idea. The California would get the tax it needs, but that's the only good thing, and I think it wouldn't stop the drugs. So,
well, that is the experience that we've heard about historically all over the planet, is that even the most draconian laws do not stop the drugs. But maybe Judge Gray would like to tackle your comments.
Well, DeVita, you've certainly been thinking about this. I simply do not believe we can ever, as you say, annihilate all drugs. Nowhere else has either. That has been the policy that we've been pursuing since about the 1970s with Richard Nixon. And on forward, we have continued to get tougher and tougher. Well, let's make a mandatory minimum of 5 years for anybody that possesses any amount of narcotics. Well, then that wouldn't work. Let's make it 10 years. Let's make it 20. Let's have the death penalty. Let's have, you know, three strikes, all of this sort of stuff. And literally, you can go back and look, DeVita, every time we made something more desperate, more radical, it just increased our problems. It increased the amount of money that people could make by selling drugs, and we continue to have probably the most punitive policy of any Western industrialized country, and we have a bigger drug problem than any Western industrialized country. So what you're talking about, actually, we've been doing, it hasn't worked. We have to get away from that punitive address and try to go back with something to be more sensible. Instead of moralizing about it, let's manage the problem, take the money out of it, and take the problems with the purity out of it, and treat healthcare issues for healthcare professionals and criminal justice issues by people's actions through the criminal justice system, then we'll start making some progress. But DeVita, it isn't going to work, and I think we've shown that over the last 30 years.
Not only the not work part, but the ramifications. We only touched on it briefly about what it means to terrorist organizations, but clearly the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, illegality of heroin and opium supports their operations.
Well, it truly does. And besides, George, and you know this, you can believe what you will about capital punishment, but we do not execute people very much in the United States. Certainly in California, where we have hundreds of people on death row, we're not executing any of them. We're too compassionate. We're never, fortunately, going to inject people with anything that might kill them. It just isn't going to happen. It's fanciful, and in these circumstances, I'm glad it's fanciful, because I certainly would not favor it.
Thanks for the call. First-time caller, Henry in Texas. Good morning, Henry.
Oh, good morning. I just would like to say that here in Texas, they did pass House Bill 315, I think it is, that said you could possess up to 4 ounces of marijuana. Right after they did that in all the newspapers, anonymous judges and police departments said they weren't going to abide by this law anyway. They were going to arrest you and put you in jail no matter what. And anytime you ask one of these elected judges or any of these appointed police officials how they feel about this subject, they won't tell you. So is there any way to get rid of these people except by cartel assassination?
Ooh. Henry, please.
Boy, we thought the pro-enforcement guys were tough.
These are tough dudes you've got on your show, George. You know, I wasn't aware of House Bill 315, Henry. I absolutely believe that any policeman or judge or anyone else that is in a public position that says, I will not enforce those laws, should resign. I have enforced laws that I don't agree with. I tell my jurors that they have to enforce the law whether they agree with it or not. I don't have to do it quietly. In fact, that's why I'm taking time and being on the show tonight. But no, if people do not enforce the law and they're judges, they should not be judges. And that should be a disqualification, either ethically or certainly through the ballot box.
We're going to go to our wild card line, Dennis.
Yes, thanks for taking my call, George. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to ask the judge, I live here in Illinois, and it seems like the prevailing attitude here is that law enforcement is just chomping at the bit from the things we see on TV around here to make drug arrests. And also, in the last few years, this whole idea of anything to do with somebody being on a public roadway, highway, anything that has to do with driving, like drunk driving, driving while using a cell phone, anything of that nature where they can set up a roadblock, and it just seems like law enforcement is looking for a way to be proactive and, you know, on crime, and it doesn't matter much what it is, you know, whether, you know, the cry goes out to do something about crime, and the only thing that they have that they're that they can do is set up roadblocks on the road, and it's always under the guise of keeping us safer. Every night when I turn on the news, it's police are going to keep you safe by this, you know, they're setting up another roadblock to keep citizens safe, and once they get you stopped at a roadblock, then, you know, they can search you, and it doesn't matter whether you're drinking or if you know, they find drugs on you. That's, you know, they're just more than happy to make an arrest for, you know, it's like the only thing that, the only way they can be proactive instead of reactive. And okay. And I think asking police to make fewer arrests is like asking a gorilla to eat fewer bananas.
Judge Gray, it's sort of an example of how law enforcement has taken this and run with it, in the sense of setting up roadblocks that further erode civil liberties that we talked about earlier.
Well, Dennis raises a really valid point. You know, law enforcement, they're human. They are going to take, in effect, the low-hanging fruit. They're going to take the path of least resistance, get their statistics. We can show that there is a marijuana arrest nationwide every 18 seconds, and it's not people selling marijuana, and like 80% of those arrests are marijuana users. It's just simply human nature to, if you've got something, you can make an arrest. Yes, use it as a subterfuge, so maybe you'll find something else. It's just the path of easiest, least resistance, and they're human. So we need to design a system that will not so strongly encourage this really ineffective harassment for no good purpose. That's why in my own courtroom, George, I would see us churning low-level drug offenders through the system for no good purpose. That really inspired me to speak out against this failed policy, and one of the reasons why I do that.
So okay, Judge Gray.
Right in what he's talking about.
Thanks for all those calls. We'll take more right after this with our guest, Judge Jim Gray, talking about the war on drugs here on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Judge Jim Gray about drug policy, the war on drugs. The phone lines are jammed. We'll get to as many of your calls as we can right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Judge Jim Gray, is it counterproductive to call this a war on drugs? It conjures up all this imagery of us digging in and fighting back, and boy, we can't surrender.
Yes, indeed, George. That form of discussion is so harmful, because if you're a soldier in a war, like on drugs, then you see what the drug users as the enemy. Well, it's okay to lie and say, well, you know, he discarded this bindle of cocaine, so I arrest him. Why not? Well, you know, because he's the enemy and I'm the good guy. So that whole rhetoric is simply inappropriate. These are health issues, and in fact, Let me say that while we're on our breaks, I'm getting lots of emails from around the country, and it's really great. And they come through my website, judgejimgray.com, and I will respond to all of them. One of them was from a police officer, and he's getting there. He understands that some of these issues, but one of them he is saying, he just doesn't differentiate between a health issue, which is an addiction, as opposed to a criminal justice issue, which is, people's actions. And those are the things that we just need to get to. But yes, the whole war on drugs is just a terribly misleading and hopeless type of situation.
I know it's a health issue for heroin addicts, for meth addicts, people who can't control their actions. They're hooked. What about marijuana users? I mean, it's not as much a health issue for them, is it? They're not supposedly hooked.
It's not. George, the estimate is by the federal government that about 20 million people use marijuana regularly in our country. I use alcohol pretty much every day, and I use it responsibly. I'm not driving a motor vehicle while impaired. I'm not beating up my spouse or even without it. And a lot of people use drugs responsibly. Even heroin usage or cocaine, let's say, only about 10% of the people that use cocaine in our country use it with a frequency of more than once a week. Now, I don't think it's a smart thing to do, but you can't say they're addicted. They can use it and still function pretty well. Well, let them alone. I think we should educate them away from that, just like with cigarettes or caffeine even. That can be harmful as well. But let's not put them in jail. We have thousands of people in prison in California alone because they did nothing but smoke marijuana while they were on parole. Well, that's a stupid thing to do. I acknowledge it. But, at that point, they lose their jobs again. They go back into prison. We spend $30 a year of taxpayer money to keep them there. Probably their family goes back on welfare. I mean, that's just not the right approach when they're not causing harm to others. So that's the thing that we need to do. And I'm seeing a lot of that in my emails that I've gotten across the nation from our time together. So good for them. And again, I'll respond individually to each email that I get.
Good. Let's get to some calls. Josie in Virginia on the wild card line. Good morning, Josie.
Hey, hi. I talked to our governor, Bob McDonnell, when he was running for office. I said, well, listen, we ought to do something about this drug problem. And he said, well, we have drug courts. And that's about all the time he had for me because there were a lot of people to talk to. But I'm thinking, it's not drug courts. That's so after the fact. I had a son on cocaine. He's coughing. He hid it from me. So I had no idea until he had long been using it for a long time, and it's taken him a long time to – we had to hire an interventionist. But I had here something that I wanted you to know, several things. One is there's a catalog of all the wonderful products made out of hemp. It's called Harmony 7th Generation, and that was an older catalog. I just kept it. And the other thing is a Audubon magazine, of all things, from November-December issue of 1999, for anybody who can Google this. I don't have a computer, but it's called Legalize It, and it's by a man named Ted Williams. And it's all about hemp and all the good things, what it does and so forth. And what the third thing I really wanted to tell you was that there is something that can get rid of the addictions for people who are addicted. It's called Ibogaine Tabernath. And the pill that's made from it, taking the active ingredient out of the plant, I'm an herbalist, so I'm in favor of anything that's herbs that help people, like marijuana. You take it and you see that you go into an altered state, but it's not something that's addictive. They put that on Schedule 1. And for everybody listening, we need to bang down the doors of our government and say, get the Ibogaine off of Schedule 1, because it can help people in treatment centers. So in other words, they could be using this in the treatment centers that we've got now. I mean, this makes sense. Well, of course, the government never makes sense, but we can try to make them, because it's true. The leaders aren't our leaders. They're just trying to get elected. We are the leaders.
Hey, Josie, let's let Judge Gray jump into here. Thanks.
Well, Josie, and thank you. And it's been interesting listening to you. You have lots of information. The drug courts are a positive revolution in our court system. They take a lot of effort, though, but they really make judges and prosecutors and police officers treat people as people, which is a good thing. It also holds them accountable for their actions, which is also a good thing. But when I have to sentence somebody to jail again for short, you know, 5, 10, 15 days because they relapsed and went back on cocaine or whatever, I'm sorry about it, and I prop them up and the rest. But the answer is use that drug court to control people's actions, not what they put into their bodies. And then what you say about the various schedules, doesn't it make sense to have the decision as to which drug should be on which federal schedule be made by a healthcare professional, such as the Surgeon General, instead of a police officer like the head of the DEA? And there we will begin to make some progress, because there's a whole lot of hypocrisy going on with, certainly with marijuana, where marijuana is a Schedule I drug today, which means it has no viable medical usage. Well, that's simply silly. But Marinol, which is a synthetic marijuana, can be prescribed. It's a Schedule II drug. Why the disparity? Well, honestly, because pharmaceutical companies cannot patent a plant, so they have no interest in marijuana, but they can make money off the synthetic marijuana, Marinol. So, of course, they have actively pursued that, and they've made that to be able to be prescribed as a Schedule II drug. Just doesn't make sense. I'm not sure if you mean Ted Williams to be the baseball player or not.
I don't think so.
Be interesting. But certainly hemp has thousands of usages, just like you say, and we need to revitalize that, because we're punishing our merchants as well as our agriculture folks by requiring us to import hemp from those radical countries like Canada and England, for heaven's sake. And we're spending about $1 billion to Canada on their hemp products each year. We ought to raise them in ourselves in our own country.
You know, speaking about drug courts, we have them here in Las Vegas. They were started by a guy named Judge Jack Layman about 15 years ago. They don't work for everyone. You know, you'd still have people who screw up and get thrown back in jail, but it's been a tremendous success overall in terms of recidivism rates and people getting their lives together. A much better policy than letting them rot in a prison cell somewhere.
That's absolutely right. And drug courts are great, and Layman has done a great job on them.
Thanks, Josie. Rusty in Arizona on the wild card line. Hi, Rusty.
Good morning. You are all talking about one of my favorite subjects. Hello?
Yes?
I say you're talking about one of my favorite subjects. But before I get to my purpose of my call, number one, I find it very ironic the fact that your program started on May 16th, which was the day that 1966, they made LSD illegal. And I also find it ironic the fact that the United States government had to pass a constitutional amendment to make alcohol illegal, but they've never had to do it for drugs.
Well, I didn't know about the date. Judge, do you want to tackle the thing about alcohol?
I want to make another comment.
Okay.
Well, okay. The other thing is, what we need to do in this country to solve the war on drugs is very simple. We need to legalize all drugs, period. And when I say legalize them, I'm talking about making them legal to the point you do not buy them. You are given these, or the government is giving these away free. The reason for this is, if you have no reason to have money to purchase drugs, no one's going to rob you, steal your car, break in your house, or anything like that. This takes away the profit away from the illegal drug dealers. They're not going to sell it. This stops the crime. It gives the cops more time to investigate other kind of problems. It gives the prisons time to be open up. And it also, what you have to do in this is you have to put an age bracket in it. And if anybody either purchases for someone under age or gives it to them, or while either purchasing or use of the drugs, commit any type of crime, they go to jail forever, period.
Well, Rusty, I think you make points that Judge Jim Gray has been making this evening. I don't know about jail forever on that. One thing that Rusty mentioned, Your Honor, is about psychedelics, LSD, peyote, mushrooms. Do you make any special consideration for that category of drug?
Well, you know, today down in Brazil, for example, in the jungle where they have these various tribes, the hallucinogens are used very constructively for various proceedings, but they are kept and under control of the medicine men. And so they use them constructively, and they use them pretty well. We, of course, in our country, have them illegal, so the hallucinogens are controlled basically by illegal drug dealers and children. So you can tell which system is working better. As far as the LSD, I was unaware of any dates. As far as what Rusty is saying, though, he is saying that we can do away with drug money problems. And, you know, he says given away for free. We do have that trump card. We could do that. It will never come to that, and I certainly wouldn't countenance that per se. But if we had to, we could give them away for free. But what we do instead is put them at about 2 cents less than an illegal dealer, can still stay in business, still take criminal justice risks. We can drive the illegal dealers out of business because of the profits, because of the money. We can always undercut that. But I wouldn't legalize any drugs, and I don't mean to play semantical word games with you, but legalization means basically think aspirin. You know, it can be advertised. You can get you buy it generically or name brands. There's no age restrictions. Your 12-year-old daughter could buy a case of it if she wants to. Nobody wants that for cocaine. I do not want them to be advertised. So you have a strictly regulated control, basically like alcohol and cigarettes, but you really tighten it down. So that you can run the illegal dealers out of business. Like Rusty is saying, you can get rid of the drug money problems. Then you put our heads together and start addressing the drug problems. Drug problems are best addressed by drug treatment and holding people accountable for their actions. Because, you know, the tougher we get with regard to drug harms or drug crimes, George, literally the softer we get with regard to the prosecution of everything else. So, in 1990, and I cite this in my book, Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed, we were only half as successful in prosecuting homicides nationwide as we had been in 1980. Why? Because the Reagan administration, again, had ratcheted up the war on drugs. We were spending all of these resources in prosecuting nonviolent drug offenders instead of robbers, rapers, and murderers. And therefore, you know, the tougher you get on drug crime, the softer you get on everything else. I think Rusty's comment took that into account as well.
Thanks for that call, Rusty. We're going to go to our international line, Alex in Toronto. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning. I think that another thing that the judge, Your Honor, I think another thing that we're looking into is in law enforcement, the assets forfeiture laws, individual law enforcement agencies make a lot of money out of drug laws, out of seizing cars and houses, et cetera. And the other thing I would say is anyone who's been on the job more than a week, when you get in fights with people who are on alcohol, that's where you get injured. If you are ever arresting someone who's high on marijuana, they're complacent, happy, quiet, and they're just happy as all if you'll stop at a drive-thru and buy them a hamburger on the way to jail. They'll be your friend forever. So I think the biggest problem we have right now is alcohol is far bigger problem than marijuana has ever been or will ever be. And I believe that part of the problem you're going to have is in convincing law enforcement agencies, especially the high-priced help, senior command staff, that assets forfeiture money is going to be gone.
Well, what Alex says is true, George. There's an institutional corruption with regard to asset forfeiture because a lot of the police who seize the drugs, their police department actually gets to share in the booty. So, you know, I have no problem if you are found to be selling drugs and we seize your Mercedes-Benz that you're using for your purposes, forfeit it, that's fine, but only after the person has been convicted of possession of drugs with intent to sell, and then put the money in the general fund, but don't put it into the police, the district attorneys, or otherwise, because it gives them much too much of an incentive to focus on that, and things get askew. Otherwise, as far as what he says about marijuana, you know, when somebody gets overdosed on marijuana, the worst thing that happens is they just laugh at silly jokes. They're not harmful. If you really want to address violence, you should probably make alcohol illegal again because alcohol is directly connected to violence. Marijuana is simply not. It's really the opposite. So there's a little bit of hypocrisy in there, too, or irony, like Alex says.
So you would not be in favor of legalizing any of this stuff. You're more of looking at decriminalization.
No. strictly regulated distribution, similar to what we do for alcohol and cigarettes. And by the way, we don't condone people smoking cigarettes, even though cigarettes are not illegal. But I don't want them to be advertised. You know, I'm a libertarian. From what do I want the government to be involved with any of this stuff for, George? But the answer is, if it's going to be owned by Philip Morris or Anheuser-Busch or something, they have a First Amendment right to advertise their product, and I do not want people to advertise cocaine or marijuana over the radio or anywhere else to glamorize it. The whole idea is to take away the glamour, not add to it. So that means that the government, probably in low-bid contract, could have somebody raise and package the stuff, and another low-bid contract could have a government package house, kind of like goes on in Pennsylvania or Georgia for selling harder alcohol, and do it that way. At least in my state, that's what I would do.
And is there any circumstance under which a user would go to jail just for using? And I'm not talking about driving a car, flying an airplane.
No. It's the same thing as the government has no right to control what I put into my body as an adult any more than what I put into my mind. It's none of their business.
East of the Rockies, Ken in Lincoln, Nebraska. Got to be a quick one, Ken.
Hey, I want to know how Judge Jim will stop the underage minor that makes $3,000 a week, stop selling drugs, and go back to school so he can get a high school diploma so that he can earn minimum wage. I also want to know why, when the Border Patrol stops people from bringing it across the border and they accidentally shoot them in the behind, the Border Patrol gets put in jail, and the runner goes free. Please, Jim, answer.
Okay. Ken, there's no such thing as having a perfect system, and I can't design one, and neither can you. And if I am going to have it illegal for minors under 21, in my view, to use or possess drugs, somebody, you're right, is going to supply it to them, and some kids are going to continue to sell drugs to kids. I can't help it. I wish I could. So I have no answer. I acknowledge that that's still going to be a problem. We will prosecute it. As far as Border Patrol, and I know you're thinking of a particular matter, if anyone shoots at somebody inappropriately, they should be prosecuted. And I don't know the actual facts of that case, but if in fact someone was not a threat to them and they shot them, I don't care if they're on the Border Patrol or a police officer or just your next door neighbor, they should be held accountable for their actions as well.
Judge, is there an argument that gives you pause that you've heard that, I have a hard time figuring that one out? I think about PCP users, for example. Those guys on that stuff, they are not easy to handle for police.
You're absolutely right. And if they are causing problems to police, then arrest them, for heaven's sake. But, you know, George, you can't keep people if they want to get something and get high. You know, if anything else, they'll sniff gasoline. I mean, if you want to get a high, I assure you, you can get a really quick, solid high by sniffing gasoline. Of course, you do that by killing your brain cells, and you'll have a hangover you won't believe. But if people are determined to do it, they're going to be able to. So at least let them know what they're putting into their bodies, bring them closer to medical professionals that can help them, help mentor our kids, educate our kids, hold them, everyone accountable for their actions. But this whole sense of prohibition
Judge, thanks. It's been a great show. JudgeJimGray.com. If you want more information, thanks to Jason and Gina and all the folks at Coast to Coast. I'll be back next Sunday night. Thank you, everyone, and good night.